Good evening. My name is Maureen Freely, and I'm from the Warwick Reading Programme. And it is a great, great privilege to welcome to Warwick Izzeldin Abdullah. How did I do? I didn't pronounce your name correctly. Yeah. It's not just an honor, it is, I assure you, going to be an education. But he was born in a refugee camp in Gaza, and his family, which was formerly a landowning family, was very, very poor when he was growing up, but with the help of his, particularly his mother, his family, particularly his mother and his teachers, he went into medicine and has worked and trained in many parts of the world and spent many years working in hospital in Israel. On the 16th of January 2009, during the assault on Gaza, and 2 days before the ceasefire, the Israeli army shelled his house and killed three of his daughters. And I'm going to leave it to Izzeldin to tell the story of what has happened since and what he has done since, and that he's written about in the book, I Shall Not Hate. He's going to read a little bit from the book, but before you do, I'd just like to read the little section in the beginning from David Grossman. Yes? I'll read that. David Grossman, the Israeli novelist. I met Dr. Abolish just a few days after the loss of his three daughters. We faced each other as we were about to shake hands. And then, without much thought, we held each other in a warm embrace. It is so rare, I thought, in this debilitating and devastating area we inhabit, to meet a person like him, a man who, despite his own losses, continues his belief in humanity and its potential for good, despite all. Through his eyes, I could see another way, a way the two nations could treat each other, a way that could extract what is good, special, and humane in both of them. I could see an alternative that could light up the great similarity of both peoples, one that gets denied and put down time and time again. This option, now so scorned and held in such contempt, suddenly sprang to life, embodied in the man I was watching. That's David Grossman, but now we get to hear from the man himself.
Thank you. Can I kind of start the poem?
To
start the poem, yes. I will start by reading a poem which was written by an Israeli woman in memory of my daughter, Bisan. And Bisan, for me, was everything, because she was 20 years old. She was the sister, the friend, the manager, the advisor that no one can't love Bisan. She was supposed to get her BA a few months later, and to be the first one in the history of the Islamic University to get it in 3 years. Bisan that I learned from. And I will remember, continue to remember, what did she say? After she lost her mom, 4 months before she was killed, she said, "Now I learned something. As students, you think the academic exams are the difficult thing in life." She said, after she lost her mom, "Now I learned one thing. It's the life exams. The life exams are the most difficult in life. Academic exams are the easiest." Bisan is the first Palestinian girl that I sent at the age of 14 to peace camps. And there, when she came back, she said, "I found how similar are we. They were Muslims, Jewish, Christians, the Druze, Bedouins from everywhere. Bisan is the girl who said, to meet terrorism with terrorism or violence with violence doesn't solve any problem. Pisan, at the age of 14, she said, everything starts small, then becomes big. Everything starts in one place, then goes in different directions. Those are our children, especially my daughters and others that I am proud of. And that what can we learn from them? I recommend, for me in my life, if I want something, I go to my children to ask them, what do you think? Because they have no conflict of interest, and they say what do they feel and what do they believe in. This poem, which was written for every one of us, about the heart, that we lost the feeling of our heart. We think the heart is just to pump blood. The heart has other functions, and we must find other functions of the heart. Something that we lost, which is the love to ourselves and to others. So the poem which was written, it's called Where Love Resides. Where Love Resides, in memory of Pisan. I long to touch you, Pisan, one more time, to hug you, to tell you how sorry I am that your mom died. But now, you two are gone. Your smiling face, your gentle way, your softness, your non-judgmental words, your pain for your people, your way of life, your dreams, aspirations, and your hope for peace. Just days before the war, I spoke with your dad. He gave me your phone number. It's still in my car. Every day I glance at the number, seeing your name, Pisan. I wish I had spoken with you more, but I didn't have the guts. I spoke with you 3 days before you died. I told you that I am praying for your safety. My prayers were not heard. Through the shelling, the bombing, the Qassams, the smoke, I feel I have been betrayed by God, by my country, by the cruelty of humanity, by the warmongers, by those who think violence is the solution. And with all of this, I have been given a gift to have spent 6 weeks with Shada, Azzeddin, and Ghaida. I heard no words of revenge, no hatred. I heard no anger. I heard the deep belief that peace is possible, even with this enormous loss. I have been strengthened from their strength. I am more determined from their determination. I am more at peace from their peacefulness. Pisan, forgive me for not being able to save you from my own people. Forgive me for giving you hope that peace is possible and then taking that dream from you. You will always be my symbol of hope, peace, and mostly gentleness. Your dad shared the dream with me days after you died. He came into a room full of men, and there you were, sitting amongst them. He asked you, why are you sitting here, Pisan? You know, it is not acceptable in our society. You answered, all is fine now, Dad. I am happy and well. I can be here among the men where I am needed. May no other woman need to die in order to be able to influence the men as you have, Bisan. May we women be heard and heeded, and may the men in this world get the chance to know from deep within their hearts that this is where the answer lies, in their hearts, where love resides.
Thank you very much. Now, in your book, you talk about the difference between anger and hatred, and I shall not hate. You make your statement very, very clear. This is at the heart of your philosophy, and I was wondering if you could just speak about that dream, that philosophy, where it comes from.
There is difference between anger, outrage, and hate. Anger and outrage is an acute disease. It's something acute, as a wave that comes and disappears. But hate is a chronic. Because in pathology, we classify diseases acute and chronic. So we can feel the anger, and we want it. It's a need, but not to lose control with anger. To feel angry about what is happening, the injustice in this world, and what's our responsibility to change the current situation. To direct our energy in a positive way to help us, not to lose control. That's the anger that each of us, and all of the time we feel it. Sometimes you feel angry about your child, your brother, your sister, your colleague. You're angry from goodwill. You want to take care of him. It's not accepted. But hate, for me personally, because you hate when you face something that you can't tolerate, something who did bad things to you. For me, as a Palestinian refugee, that one day I have a country, I have a state, I have my parents, they lived in their land. And I was born to that family in a sudden, they have nothing to be a refugee. So whom to hate? If I want to list the people who did bad things to me, the list will be endless. Because my suffering and the suffering in this world, it's man-made. It's not natural, it's not from God. It's what did we do to each other? And how many times am I going to be a victim of hate? I don't accept it. I don't want to be a victim more of hate. And even if I want to hate, the one that I plan to hate, do you think, is he thinking of me? He wants me to collapse. The antidote of hate and revenge is success. To stand steadfast, not to show the one that you want to hate that you collapsed. I am standing stronger, determined, and to show you that I can challenge you, I can succeed. And as I said, hate is a poison. Don't allow it to invade you. Because later on, once you are affected with hate, you will never recover. You can manage it, but healing and complete recovery from hate, it will never happen. And as I said, the antidote of hate is success. And I'm not speaking about something theoretical. My children who faced, what did they face in life and within the last year? But they were determined. They were focused to move forward. My daughter Shada, that I am proud of, as many Palestinian children and other children. At the start of the school year, she lost her mother, 16th of September 2008. 16th of January 2009, she lost three sisters and niece, and she was severely wounded. She spent 4 months in the hospital. She lost the sight in one eye, but didn't lose the other. She said, I have to go to school, because during the war, where we don't have any vital needs, she studied on candles to be one of the first in Palestine in the high school. April 2009, she said, I don't want to stay in the hospital. Before completing her treatment, and she did the exam. And the day we moved to Canada, they announced the result, and she succeeded as nothing happened. She succeeded 96%, and now she's studying computer engineering at the University of Toronto. That's the success, not to be drowning in hate, in anger. The pain is severe, and the wound is deep. But it reminds me personally of not accepting what happened, of being more determined, of working hard. And that's what I said. I swore to God and to my daughters, because as a believer, one day I will meet them, to meet them with a gift that their souls and their blood was sacrificed to tell them, I am proud of you. I am coming, bringing you the justice that you paid your souls and the blood. And that's what my life is devoted for. And I will continue. I am sure one day we will reach there.
Could I ask you to talk a little bit about your foundation, which you set up in your daughter's memory?
My daughters, as many children, they were able to plan. For me, as a child, I can't plan. I have to dream. And as a child, I dreamed to be a medical doctor. Because I can occupy someone else, I can oppress, I can deprive, I can imprison, but no one can prevent any one of us to dream. So I can tell you, and tell your friends, a dream. No one can prevent you, and the dreams are close to reality. But it needs hard work to achieve those dreams. I succeeded, but what about others who have the same potential as my girls, but they can't achieve their dreams? I want to see the plans of my daughters fulfilled by other girls. And in my life, I am indebted to my mother, my wife, and my daughters. And I fully believe in the potential of girls, the Palestinian mother. As every other mother, the Palestinian mothers are the heroes behind the survival and the viability of the Palestinian cause. She is the one to sacrifice, to feed, to work hard, to push the children. That's why this foundation, as you see on the cover, my daughters, they succeeded 2 weeks before they were killed. I took them to the Gaza beach just to heal from the first tragedy. And they succeeded to see their names written in sand on the beach. And every now and then a wave to come to clean it, as if they knew they will be cleaned from life. But where are their names written now? It's written in stone on their tombs. And in our life, who can see his name written in stone or in metal? Only generals, leaders, philanthropists. But I said, my daughter's names will be written in stone and metal on institutions for girls and women in the Middle East. This foundation is devoted for education and health for girls and women in the Middle East. We succeeded to have it as a registered charity in Canada, and the headquarters for the programs will be in Gaza, because it's time for Gaza to give, not to receive. Because I believe a healthy, educated girl and woman will raise healthy, educated children, husband, family, community, and nation, and it's women's role. The means of fighting have changed. Education, and we must equip our girls with the right and the quality of education.
You've done a tremendous amount of work during your all your working life to not just to bring good medical care in Gaza, but also to connect Gaza with the outside world, bring in expertise, and also build collaboration for public health, and also collaboration for the good health of all the peoples of the area with Israeli doctors. I was wondering if you could explain the work that you've done. It's a very remarkable story.
When I finished my specialty in obstetrics and gynecology from the University of London, I decided I want to be home, because nothing like home, especially close to my mother, because she was the weak. She was my weak point, my mother. And I started to practice medicine in Israel from 91, where the Israelis used to see the Palestinians as workers, to work in their farms, to help them, and now to see the Palestinian as a medical doctor, as equal as they are, skilled as they are, a human as they are. And medicine has one face. It has a human face. It doesn't know name, ethnicity, religion. The happiest moment in my life was when I handled the baby to his mother. The happiest moment when a couple are coming, suffering from infertility, to help them. And after treatment, to come to say pregnancy test is positive. I worked there because I believed in it. And I was honest in it. And Soroka University Hospital, where I practiced, it became my house, my home. And the patients, they don't care, who are you? They wanted the good care. They used to ask me, from where are you? From Haifa, from Akka, from other places. I wanted them to know that I am from Jabalia refugee camp, with the full meaning. And thanks God, I am satisfied about what did I do, and I missed it, and I succeeded in that message to transmit it. And even after what happened in January, the people whom I know, whom I don't know, but they knew the Palestinian doctor, they came to the hospital to show passion, support. And that's the humanity. When we get beyond labeling and to go beyond, to be human and to behave just as a human.
In your account of, you spoke of many friends and colleagues in Israel who care for you deeply and who were instrumental in making sure that that your family members who were wounded were taken care of and so on. But I also remember, and it was very moving, but not everybody was like that. And I was very, very impressed with the way that you opened up dialogue with the people who weren't so warm and who were misunderstanding the Gaza war. So I was wondering if you could explain that, not just in Israel, but also in the US.
From my experience, little experience, I can say to you, I learned that our enemy is our ignorance of each other, our arrogance, our greed. And when God created this world from Adam and Eve, and they became nations and the tribes, for what? To know each other. And knowing is not to know the name, the face, to understand, to respect, to show passion and compassion, to be connected. In our life, when I speak to you about someone that you know, please, Izzeldin, I know him well. This means you read him, the inside, the core of that person. And that's what we lack. We don't know each other. Sometimes we are sitting close, but we are not connected. So with that, I have colleagues that I respected, and we build the relations. But after what happened from this tragedy, I remember it in the media conference. Some people, they want to show others that they are loyal and to attack and to blame others before blaming themselves. And it's important before blaming others to see your face in the mirror. Blaming is a way to defend yourself, to escape responsibility. I am there, and a woman started to attack me. They don't want to see the truth and the light, and that they are angels and others are devils. The coin has two sides. And we were blessed to have two eyes, to see by both eyes, not to see one side. We need to see the other side. She started to attack that my daughters are militants. And what about others that they were firing? Because after what happened, I knew that my daughter's room was shelled by Israeli tank shell. It was clear. But instead of taking responsibility and to speak about the truth, they started to justify. That the first justification, and this is a message to you, don't take anything for granted from the media. Think of it. If it goes with logic or not, it's not holy. It's not Bible or Torah or Quran. People who have their own self-interest, individual interest, they started to say there were snipers at the roof of the house. At the roof of the house, which is the fifth floor, and I'm living in the second floor, and it's for me and my brothers. Who are those snipers? And if you saw them, why you didn't shell them and to kill them? And if you misled the first hit, why two shells at the same room? It is not enough. The second day, they said there were militants inside the room. I said, my daughters, they were armed, but they were armed with love, with education, with care to others. That's their weapon. It is not enough. The third scenario, every 2 days to come with a new scenario, and some people, they believe in it. The third, that there were firing from the surrounding. And the most painful and immoral, when they said, we took shrapnels from my niece's wound, and they examined it, and it was found that it comes from Hamas rockets. I think I want you to judge this. What can you say? But I can say to you one thing. Be consistent, be determined. What did I answer? Said to them, the truth is here. I know it. And I am persistent and focused. That's why those people who came just to attack, to show, to repeat what the media says, it took 1 month. And this is because of good colleagues of mine who wrote to the Minister of Defense, you must tell the truth. And it came after 1 month that we shelled the house. And this lady who attacked me the second morning, they asked me, what do you think of her? Believe me, I care about her. And I asked to meet her. And I am ready to listen to her. But at the same time, I have the right to listen to me, to explain to her. I care about her. And that's what is needed, not to deny and neglect.
One good thing about the media is that it's not, especially with the way technology is now, it's not as controlled as it might have been before. And fortunately, you had a voice in the media then. I was wondering if you could explain that. It's the voice then, and also you have a voice now.
Words are stronger than bullets, and I fully believe in that, in the power of words, especially the right words that you select them, which are built on wisdom and kindness. After what happened in Gaza, no one knows about it. It was a secret. The Gazans became numbers. 100, 200, 300 groups, they started to speak about a group of people who are killed, the children, as if they have no names, faces, dreams. It's shame. Killing one, you kill the world. To save one, you save the world. And that's all of the time I used to say. During the war, I became as informal correspondent. My colleagues, media, and to tell them, it's painful to me to say that this war, it widened the gap between Palestinians and Israelis, and the bloodshed is more. And how can we rehabilitate the destruction induced by this craziness? And this tragedy, after what happened, when I go back to it, seconds, less than 5 seconds after I left my daughter's room, the first shell came. If I stayed 5 seconds, I would be gone with them. And to be added to the numbers in Gaza Strip. But it's God's bless. It's God's mercy for a cause. And at the same time, of shelling the house, I was supposed to be interviewed live by the Israeli TV about issues related to women's health and the situation in Gaza. So I called them. And it's immoral courage. My friend, he opened the speaker when he listened to me. Unconscious. He said to me, Ezzeldin, I thought this will be the last day of my work here. I will be fired. But it's a moral courage. And the director general of the channel, he sent him a note, keep the speaker open. and it spread all over the world to open the eyes of the international community, the Israeli public, about the size of the tragedy, what is going on there. Innocent civilians, children, women, old people who are killed, and to put an end to this bloodshed. And it satisfied me that the second day was announced unilateral ceasefire by the Israeli Prime Minister, that the blood of my daughters wasn't futile. It saved others. But do we need to be killed in order to save? We need to save for the sake of saving.
One question I had when reading the book, clearly you work in gynecology and obstetrics and fertility and your and women's health, and you have a very you're very eloquent about the importance of women in any solution and the importance of women in society. But what I couldn't quite figure out is where this philosophy came from, because you were also saying it wasn't the philosophy that you grew up with. I mean, yes, your mother, but it wasn't the respect you have for women you didn't necessarily find around you. So where did it come from?
It's from my life, as I said. My mother, she has a role. She protected us. She wanted me to succeed from nothing. Sometimes it was painful to me. When I go to school, how can I succeed and to do well? And in the afternoon, I have to go to find some work. She said, I don't know. You have to succeed. You have to challenge. You have to work hard. She sacrificed her life. The mother, I have seen my mother and Palestinian mothers. I don't imagine how did she sacrifice to eat something, to make it soft, and to take it from her mouth, to give it to her children. When the Palestinian mother, after delivery, and she is in need of any kind of food, to have some eggs, and her children surrounded her, to see her children, to prefer her children, to give it to her children. The mother is the one, she is the main pillar inside the house. And that's one of the things that my mother to promote, to support, to encourage, to defend. And if some harm happened to us, to be the lion to stand up to defend us. My faith helped me a lot. Because, you know, concerning education and women's role, the first ayah in Quran, it's read. Read in Quran. To read. Not for males and for females. It's for both. It's read. And in Quran, in our religion, in my faith, the paradise is under the feet of the mother. If you want to search God's satisfaction, it's from parent satisfaction, to be satisfied about you. And when someone came to Prophet Muhammad asking him, whom do you recommend me to take care of? He said, your mother. Your mother. Whom else? Your mother. Whom else? The fourth time he said, your dad. The mother is the holy, is the person. You don't imagine, you know, because as an obstetrician, I know the suffering. How? I think Furial, she was there. She is here. She worked at the Soroka. When some women are coming for treatment for infertility, to come from far, maybe 100 kilometers to take injections, to get pregnant for IVF, in vitro fertilization, how did she suffer? And at the time of delivery, the suffering, the pains to handle her baby, she forgets the suffering and the pain. and she sacrificed her life. So that's the mother. So we need at least, you know, to give the credit to the mothers and women in this world.
Before the event, we were talking about the difference between the general understanding of what's going on now in this country, whatever the government policy is because of the BBC and the documentaries, and in the US, where there's people who are educated even, don't know anything. And so the question is with some anger, with no hatred, is it possible to convey the realities of life in Gaza in the U.S.? And because you've been doing a lot of this, that's why, and you've been successful in going into groups that haven't been listening before.
But, you know, it's good what did you say. It's not about the situation in Gaza. Okay. We are focused about Gaza. Gaza, of course, it's part of the Palestinian nation. We don't want to miss and to be lost just to focus in Gaza. There is a Palestinian nation.
Yeah, okay.
And we must speak about the Palestinian nation. Part of that is the Gazan people. And the Palestinian nation, they have the right to get their freedom. And when we speak about Palestinians in general, that's what is needed. There is suffering here and there in Gaza Strip. There is suffering in the West Bank. What about other Palestinians? That's the first. The second, education is different from knowledge. Many people you can find who are educated, but they don't know in life anything. In their field, they are great. They are expert in English, in literature, in medicine, but in society, in life, science, they are unaware. They are not connected. So knowledge is something different. And this comes, I can say to you, that's why. A travel for me is not fun. I am here, but I count the minutes, the hours, to be back with my children. But I feel the responsibility towards my people and my daughters that I am doing my part of not relaxing or resting. I am doing. I didn't relax. I did everything possible to bring you the justice, and that's what is needed from everyone. And believe me, I am a hopeful person. I see the change is coming, because nothing is impossible in life. That's what I learned. The only impossible thing in life I believe in is to return my daughters back. What did you say just 2 months ago? Anyone would expect what happened? No one. Even I say to the Americans, if I came to you 4 years ago to tell you I dreamed the president of the States will be a black guy called Barack Hussein Obama, how this comes together to be fixed, you don't imagine. But who is the president? Now, he is. So nothing is impossible. We need to work hard and to believe in it. So what can I say? Your coming here strengthen my hope. To have hope. To have faith in that hope and to act. It's an action. And don't underestimate the size of your action. Just to do something. Don't wait for others. Take the initiative as much as you can and to do. And be confident in it. Don't reject the size of your action. And the interesting story of a young girl who was sitting on the shore when a heavy tide threw hundreds of starfish. As a young girl, with her heart, she started to think of saving, to throw one by one into water to save them back. A man, look at that girl, what is she doing? What are you doing? She said, I'm trying to save. But it is not going to make any difference. There are hundreds with evidence-based role model to show him that it makes a difference. She threw another one and said to him, it made a difference to that one. And that's what is needed from each of us, just to do, to act, and to give. Believe me, if you started to go out, to open your heart, you will get, and to share with others, you will get the happiness and the joy and the love that we all lost, and we are running to find it, and we didn't find it because we think happiness is here, joy is here. It's not. Happiness is through others. It's with others, and you can find it through sharing, through giving. The happiest moment, each of you, if you tried, when you give something to someone, or to smile in the subway, in the bus, to give your seat to an old man or woman, how do you feel? Or to attach to a child, that day you will say, oh, I am the happiest. You feel that. So be connected and start with it. Start to smash those mental and physical barriers within each of you, inside us. Get it. It's artificial. We created those barriers. Get rid of them and start to be open, to open your heart, your mind, your eyes, and to move. Believe me, life will be open and you will get the happiness.
One other thing that you might think of doing to make a difference is actually to give this book to people who don't yet have a full understanding of what's going on, because it's a very humane book. There are detailed accounts of the realities of life in Gaza, the checkpoints, the poverty, the injustice. But there are also, you always notice when people are doing the hopeful things and the good things. You never generalize the anger ever. It's right. So you have a sense reading the book of the horrible tragedies, but also many, many possibilities. And so, and reading the book, one feels, one comes to understand what it's like to be living and trying to build a community under those conditions. So it's a feat of the imagination, I think.
I agree with you. It's not a book about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It has a human message. In a time of despair, and the people are frustrated and they lost hope, I wrote it as a Palestinian, but before that, as a human being. It's a human message. What can each of us do to make a difference in this world? And that's why it's each of us' responsibility to spread this message everywhere if we want to see the change. That's why it's not something personal. Laura is here from Bloomsbury Publisher. If you ask me, believe me, I would love to see this book published and printed and to be given free all over the world. I would love to see that, to give hope to the people, and that's what is needed. It's luckily, it is going to be translated into about, till now, 15 languages. English worldwide, Arabic, German, Italian, Hebrew, 15 languages, and it found a ground. The ground is receptive for the book and the message and the goodwill. The people, they ask, what can we do? It changed us. It made a difference in others' lives. So that's what can be done to spread this message. It's not my message. It's everyone's message in the subconscious feeling. Each of us is thinking the same. Let us spread it and come together and to believe in each other that we can make a difference. And we are valued, and we value the message of hope.
I should also speak in defense of the book. It's very, very, somebody who runs a writing program, it's very, very well written. And it tells It's not speeches. It tells all of this through the story of your life and your family's experiences. And there are some terrible villains, and there are the wonderful, unexpected heroes just answering to conscience at different times. And so it's the story that I'm going to remember most, and it's a story that's going to change a lot of people's views. Thank you so much for coming here. There are copies of the book for sale outside, and we have him as a captive for just a few minutes if you'd like to have it signed. And thank you very much for being a wonderful audience, but most of all, thank you to you for coming.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.